I'd like to welcome everyone to the Education Subcommittee, Ways and Means. Senator Hartung is still slightly indisposed, but doing very, very well, we understand. Although he asked me to chair, so I'm not sure how well he's actually doing, but we won't go beyond that. I'd like to get going today. We've got a very full agenda. We're at community colleges, only a limited amount of time over the next week or so to deal with that. But Senator Hartung has found a new voice or another voice for education and readiness to learn. And I want to welcome Chris Amo to our committee. And she's going to spend a few minutes discussing her program and entertain a few questions before we go to community colleges. Chris?
Thank you. As was indicated, my name is Chris Amo, and I have had a lifelong profession of working in public schools with young children from kindergarten primarily to second grade, and have since retired and am now working on my doctorate. And the topic of my doctorate, I think, is of interest to this group particularly. It is on the readiness to learn goal that was set in 1989. By the year 2000, all children in America will start school ready to learn. And what I wanted to know specifically during this study is, what do Oregonians think about this? How do they define readiness to learn? What do they think are indicators of readiness to learn? And then the so what question. What are the policies and funding that would help to make this happen? And I've brought with me a display panel, which hopefully I can leave for you for a little while so that you can get a good look at it. But it really talks about the whole study and inserts the voices of Oregonians. There were two specific research questions that I developed and have looked at over the past couple of years in preparing this doctoral study. The first one is, what do four key stakeholder groups living in rural and urban areas within Oregon identify as indicators of a child being ready to learn, and what are the similarities and differences in their perspectives? In order to look at this, I have interviewed 76 participants in small groups in four key areas in the state. I used Northeast Portland as one of the sample areas for an urban area. I also used Klamath Falls, a neighborhood in Klamath Falls, as a second urban area. For the rural areas, I went to the coast, to Walport, and gathered information from there. They have a population of 1,970 people, which qualifies them as a rural area. And then lastly, I went to the north-northeast area, to Wasco, which is actually in Sherman County and has a population of 400. And I asked this same question to all four of those areas of what did they think were indicators. Before I move into the results of that, I want to tell you about the uniqueness of this study, which makes it really unusual and of interest nationally, but of course of interest in Oregon too. First of all, it focuses only on one state. I went and I gathered the opinions of people within Oregon. I used, as one of the key stakeholder groups, let me tell you the four key stakeholder groups, I interviewed early childhood educators, which include anybody who works with children from birth through age 8, my definition of early childhood. I interviewed people in families, and I expanded beyond the traditional parents to include siblings, grandparents, step-parents, foster families, and all different variations of families, and that, again, is quite unique. I interviewed community members who had a profession that touched in some way young children and got their opinions. And I also, lastly, interviewed children ages 6 and 7. Those are the children that I've worked with throughout my career, and I know that they have an opinion. So I gathered that information. The other thing that's unusual about this study is that it is specifically comparing urban to rural. I was curious to know if there was a variation there in opinions. And then lastly, it of course, includes the voice of children, which has not been done before. Responding to that first question, I found that Oregonians consistently throughout all of the regions and throughout all of the stakeholder groups identified readiness to learn as being something broad that encompasses services both from birth all the way through public school. They did not view it as simply being ready for school. And I think that's a significant finding in things that you're looking at in terms of funding. I classified all of their responses into different categories and found that overwhelmingly they were looking at a child's approach to learning as being the key indicator. Their curiosity, their interest, their enthusiasm, their ability to focus. And that was across all groups. As a second choice, another surprise that came up in the study was that they found family involvement and support to be of second most significance. That actually is a new category that's not been included nationally nor within the Oregon kindergarten surveys that have been done before. But they really talked over and over again about how important it is to have the family involved in the child's education, reading to them at home, and working with those children in a positive way. I went beyond that with the interview groups to ask then the second question, what are the potential implications for policy and funding decisions at the state and local level, knowing that I intended to come and share this with you all. And within those stakeholder groups, the recommendation was specifically that they wanted to see more funding for programs dealing, or more policies dealing with children involved in schools and districts. They wanted to see changes in policies on how districts operate. That was a priority from the stakeholder groups. When I began to look specifically at the rural versus urban issues, the rural groups really wanted to see changes in the current state early childhood education policies, whereas the urban groups were more interested in changes in the state and district expectations. But there's quite a lot of overlap between those. So again, the voice was strong and saying we need to look at schools specifically and their ability to be ready for the children who are coming in. The second part of that question, which is probably most important to this particular group, is looking at the funding. And there again, there was some consistency within the stakeholder groups. The community said that they really want to see changes in funding again for schools and district operations, same as their policy priority. Rural areas were particularly and quite vocally concerned about changes in the current state funding for urban and rural areas, knowing that some of those areas are quite isolate and have difficulty delivering services. I then took this second question about policies and funding to what I have selected to call early childhood experts in policy and funding within the state of Oregon, people who have been influential both with the legislature and also in district level. Sent out a survey to them that included, I sent it out to 60 people and received 45 responses, giving me a 75% response rate, very strong response rate. Ask their opinion on those same two issues. On the issue of policies, the experts say that they are concerned about policy changes related to programs available before children start formal schooling. So they're saying, let's pay attention to those years before school begins and really look at their policies and shore those up. Their second priority was in changes in policy for financing schools and programs for young children. And I believe they made that selection because it is broad and encompasses both programs before school and school-age programs. For funding, their choices, again, were somewhat different from the interview groups that I did. They selected changes in financing of schools and programs for young children as their top priority, as is the priority of our governor in his budget. They also said pay attention in funding to programs that are available for children before formal school, which again is encompassed in Governor Kitzhaber's plan. I've given to you a handout that summarizes my recommendations. I believe that the voice of Oregonians is loud and clear from this particular study, and that there are investments that all four groups that I've identified on your handout can be making, specific things that we can move toward making more children ready to learn in Oregon in the next couple of years. I identified what families can do, what communities can do, what early childhood people can do, what people in general in Oregon can do, and probably, again, of most interest to you is my suggestions for policymakers, which come specifically out of this study. I'm going to close my remarks with a quote from a child in Oregon, and then I'm going to open it up for a few minutes worth of questions. The quote is, "Learning is pretty good. Besides, it helps you. If people don't want to learn, they'd be dumb when they grow up." It's a child from Wasco, Oregon. Okay. Any questions or things that I can clarify? I know that was fast.
Very good. Thank you. Yes, Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of your recommendations for policymakers is to equalize educational opportunities in rural and urban communities. Did any of your data indicate specifically what kind of opportunities the people felt were not equal?
Yes. That actually came from the rural areas. Both rural areas were quite strong about that, and they felt that funding should be based on equal opportunity, not equal money. And they were talking about that it cost more to get services to serve the number of children that they have there, and that the distance and the isolation are also key issues.
Good question. Other questions? I guess not at this time, but thank you so much. Very interesting, and we'll probably be using this as we go on, particularly as we get into the Department of Education budget and dealing with early childhood, even on human services. Right now.
Would it be possible to leave these with you for a couple of hours? I am going to talk to the Education Committee this afternoon.
That'd be fine.
Okay,
thank you very much. Okay, we'll move on to public hearing for Senate Bill 5506. Open the public hearing. Have Cam Brawley come on up, and I guess Brett West and the Dames, and then have Steve start up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate Bill 5506 is the budget of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. This is your first large general fund budget that you are taking up in your schedule this session. The budget includes approximately $475 million of general fund and $123 million of other funds, for a total budget of approximately $600 million. The expectation or the schedule is that we expect the subcommittee to be working on this budget for the remainder of this week and then all of next week as well. So that's sort of to give you an idea of how long we're expecting this process and presentation to take. I would like to mention, if I may, a few things that LSO has distributed to you this afternoon, and we took the liberty of putting them into your binder books, which is probably not the right thing to do since these are items that come from the agency, but if you can forgive us for that, we've added a couple of items, and I just want to point out what they are. At the top, you should have an item when you open your book, it's just labeled Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development and talks about enhancements and reductions in the budgets of both the governor and the co-chairs. Typically, when LFO does their presentation at the start of a budget like this, we don't spend very much time at all really talking about the governor's budget or the co-chair's budget. But if you would allow me, on this occasion, I would like to spend a little time to talk about it, because I'd like to talk about the process that the co-chairs are asking this committee to use as you work through this budget. What this page shows, and I apologize to the audience, I didn't realize there'd be this many people here, and we ran out of copies. There were still a few left when I last checked. But what this page shows is it gives a description, these are all general fund numbers, of the enhancements and the reductions in the governor's budget and how the co-chair's budget compares to what's in the governor's budget. The budget contains one enhancement, which is for student-based funding which is designed to deal with costs relating to enrollment growth, and which is funded at $45 million above the current service level in the governor's budget. When the co-chairs released their budget, they also approved $45 million for this purpose. So there is no difference here between the governor's and co-chairs' budget amounts for this enhancement. The governor's budget also, though, includes a number of reductions to existing programs. So although that budget would add money for the basic per-student support to community colleges, it would at the same time reduce funding for a number of programs that community colleges are operating. And if you look at these reductions, in this case, you'll see that the governor's numbers and the co-chair's numbers differ. And to just summarize, without going into detail, the difference, the governor budget cuts a total of $12.7 million from various existing programs. And over the next 2 weeks, you will be hearing about what these programs do and what the effect of these cuts on those programs would be. The co-chairs restored half of the cuts in their budget that the governor took. So they reduced the size of the cut in half from about 12.7 to about $6.4 million. Because of the very uncertain condition of revenues for the state, as you know, there will be a new revenue forecast coming out the day after tomorrow, which is widely expected to show a decline in revenue to the state. The co-chairs have asked and directed subcommittees to operate under the following guidelines when you consider this budget. And those guidelines are as follows. In an instance where there is an enhancement in the governor's budget and the co-chairs include funding for some of that enhancement, the co-chairs are able to accept at this point in time a recommendation from this committee, if you choose to agree, to support up to the full $45 million that is in the co-chair's budget. So if after hearing all this you agree that that is a reasonable funding decision, it is acceptable at this point to make that recommendation back to the full committee. At this time, the co-chairs are asking the subcommittees not to forward recommendations on any other enhancements, be they additional student-based funding beyond their $45 million level, or some new program or new issue that comes into recommendation here that you would like to recommend after listening to this budget. They ask that you not forward those to the full committee at this time, but rather that you would include that in an add-back list, if those are things that you would ask them to fund. In terms of the reductions, the co-chair's direction at this point in time is that you look at these programs and determine whether you want to make take these reductions or not. But at this time, you do not forward a recommendation to the full committee that spends any more that restores any of these cuts, even the ones that the co-chairs have approved. This again is, of course, because of the uncertainty of the revenue situation. So in other words, next week, when you report this budget to full committee, the co-chairs are asking you not to make any of the actual restorations in the cuts, even the ones that they've approved. If after hearing the discussion you approve restoring these cuts, the request is that you forward these to the full committee in the form of an add-back list and not as an actual restoration at this time.
Did Alfo get that right, sir?
Correct. Strong letter to follow.
Any questions for LFO on this? Okay. Go ahead.
If I may continue, members, with the handout, this is just turning over the page. I prepared some information here for you on the budget of the Department of Community College Services, which I'd like to cover quickly. I know that there's you're on a tight schedule today. But if you look at these, I'm on slide page one, you can see that the community college general fund support represents about 4% of the total general fund budget for the state, or general fund and lottery budget combined for the state. If you look at slide page two, you'll see that general fund, that most of this agency's budget is general fund. Almost 80% is general fund. About 20% is federal funds or other funds. And the important thing to keep in mind as you go through this agency and look at its programs is that the programs that are funded with general fund are quite distinct from programs that are funded from federal funds. It's not as if we have these programs that have combined funding sources. Basically, you've got programs that have general fund support, and the lion's share of that is the state dollars that flow directly to community colleges, through the Community College Support Fund. The governor's recommendation is for approximately $465 million of general fund to go to community colleges. And as I mentioned earlier, there's $475 million of general fund budget. So you can see most of that is going to community colleges just based on their, generally based on their enrollments. The federal funds support a number of federal programs that this department administers in the workforce area, including the Workforce Investment Act programs, adult family literacy programs, Even Starts, and there's also an existing program, the AmeriCorps program, in Oregon, which is currently funded, administered by this agency. The governor is proposing to take that program out of this agency. So we'll be talking about what the program is and why there's a proposal to take it out of the agency, but those are the federally funded programs. If I could ask you to skip ahead to slide page 3 and 4. These slides do not report on the budget that is before you today. That is to say, they do not report on the budget of the state agency. These rather report on the budgets of the 17 community colleges, who are not state agencies and who we do not budget for, but we provide them funding. And this is just to look at the overall situation that these colleges have faced since Measure 5 was implemented. If you look at slide 5 on page 3, you can see that property taxes declined over this period of time. Since 95, they've been increasing again, but they're still well below what they were before Measure 5. If you look at slide 6, you can see that the state support, that's the general fund that mainly goes through the Community College Support Fund, increased very rapidly to make up for that property tax decline and to still allow an increase in total support. When you look at slide number 6 and you look at the top of that, the total picture there, those are the total tax dollars that are going to community colleges from either property taxes or in general fund, you know, state taxes. And you can see that that's been going up over this period of time. And slide 7 adds tuition. It's the third source of funding available to community colleges. And because tuitions have been increased rapidly, that increases the rate of growth in total funding that community colleges have had to finance their programs. Slide 8 is just reporting that if you adjust for inflation, that's why these numbers, these areas are not increasing as rapidly. If you adjust for inflation, community college funding from all three sources has increased 28%. Since Measure 5, up to the last year that we had complete data available, which note is 98-99. So that is a couple of years ago, but it had increased 28% after adjusting for inflation. And then if you look at student growth and you adjust it for inflation and the number of students these institutions are serving, on page chart 9 shows that there's been an increase of approximately 8% after adjusting for inflation and after adjusting for student growth. So this shows a situation where the funding, at least through 98-99, was able to meet changes in inflation and changes in student growth, though it relied on tuition increases in order to be able to do that. Chart 10 shows how tuitions for community colleges have increased very rapidly, more than doubling over this period of time. Chart 11 just adjusts community college tuition for inflation, and you can see that in terms of the inflation-adjusted community college rates, those also increased very rapidly over the 90s, but have pretty much stabilized. That's to say that the inflation, the tuition increases are pretty much tracking the rate of inflation at this point. Another thing to note is that community college enrollments are at record levels now. The increase in the community college enrollment, that rate of increase, which is projected to be 3% per year, is higher than the projected rate of increase in higher ed, and quite a deal, good bit higher than the projected increase in K-12 enrollment. So it's the fastest growing of the sectors.
Question?
What's the difference in percentage in growth between, you said it's higher than K-12 and also for higher ed? Can you give us, you probably already have.
Well, actually, Representative, I don't have the exact numbers. My memory is it's about 0.7% per year for K-12 and about 2.5% for higher ed. But I will get those numbers for you tomorrow.
Thank you.
So it's not based on my memory.
Senator,
how does the increase in tuition compare with the higher ed increase in tuition?
Pretty much about the same percentage increase. Yes. Yeah. Finally, I will not take any more time to go over any of this in depth, but I want to let you know the other materials that you have here from LFO. Immediately after slide page 7, you've got our analysis of the governor's recommended budget, which is a several-page document which we hope will be helpful to you to give to display or to discuss the issues that are facing community colleges and this budget. Then we have some preliminary governor's recommended numbers on the budget that we can refer to if there are any questions. And after that, there are four items we've placed in your book. The first is an item that looks like this. Those are a list. This is a report from the state's performance measure database that lists the department's performance measures and how the department is meeting, or what the measures are against the performance targets that they have set. And this will be something that the agency discusses its performance measures. This will be an item that will be of interest to you. Finally, we've included three management letters from the Secretary of State that discuss elements of the agency's federal programs. A couple of them do make some recommendations to the agency, so you'll be hearing back from them as to how they're implementing the recommendations of the Secretary of State.
These are based on audits?
These were our reviews and audits, yes. And the last item I just want to point out that we've provided for you is actually in your front left pocket of your folder, and that is a basic presentation outline which shows what the plan is to cover for each of these days over the next 2 weeks. This, of course, will be subject to change if we go, fall behind or whatever. But you can see that there will be, starting off looking at the federal programs, then the other state programs. Day 4 on the back here, those are the programs where there are significant cuts in the governor's budget. And then finally, looking at the community college support fund. Ahead, after completing work on this budget, the next scheduled budget for the subcommittee will be the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, which is expected to take about a week after completing community colleges, and then after that will be higher ed. Unless there are any questions.
Any questions for LFO? If not, let's get Cam and Brett and Linda to come on up.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, I am Cam Croy-Solly, the Commissioner for Community Colleges and Workforce Development. You should have a packet of information from my office that has a tab on it that says Day One Agency Overview. Hopefully it will help us all keep track of where we are. Recognizing that we do have limited time, I will try to make sure that you interrupt if you have questions, but I'll try to move through this information as quickly as I can. Starting on the things that I will talk about today are the mission and goals, agency organization and restructuring, the programs that are part of the agency, our performance and performance measures, our information technology systems, and affirmative action plan. Beginning on page 2, the role of community colleges and workforce development is to provide leadership, accountability, and technical assistance to a number of stakeholders that provide service at the local level, including Oregon's 17 community colleges, 7 local workforce investment areas, numerous Oregon Youth Conservation Corps provider entities, GED testing centers, and as was just briefly mentioned by LFO staff, the Community Service Commission volunteer programs. The state board has, moving on to page 3, the state board has statutory authority and responsibility for the education services that are provided by the department, both for the Department of Education and the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Page 3 does describe the state board's goals, and we view the last one as most specific to the work of our agency, preparing students for life and their careers. On to page 4, the department's mission statement uses some purposeful words, and that is primarily contribute leadership and resources to increase skills, knowledge, and career opportunities for Oregonians. Since our role and work as an agency is to support colleges and workforce investment areas, it is we who actually support them and contribute to their work that they do at for actual service delivery. On page 5, to continue with the mission, because of the department's work, again, is done through others, it's imperative that we work together and that we work with common purpose and goals. Just would like to highlight that we identify statewide issues and facilitate resolution. You can see by all the entities that we work with, it could be and often is a full-time job. We also work to fairly allocate the resources and measure our success and outcomes. And the last one is also important. We collect an awful lot of data in all of these different programs, and we use that data that we collect to make decisions and good policy choices. The organization, how are we staffed? Page 6. The department has undergone some growing pains in the past few biennium, growing from a nearly singular focus agency that was a part of the Department of Education with a staff of 14 several biennia ago to adding workforce and job training several biennia ago, and last biennium adding the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. So we now have a full staff complement of 43. We will be bringing forward program option packages in this budget that would increase that number by 2. The next page is...
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Crowe.
How does having the State Board of Education work with the workforce development part of your charge? Do they advise or make policy decisions in that area?
Mr. Chair, Senator Crowe, the State Board of Education has policy authority for the department. The Workforce Investment Board has advisory policy responsibility to the governor. So we, on one hand, help and initiate policy questions for the state board and also do the same, but the final decider is different on the workforce side than the state board side.
Do you ask the state board for advice on workforce issues?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trowe, we certainly do, because there is, we seek integration of the services at both state and local level. It's important that they be apprised. We actually have liaison members that serve on both boards.
Continue.
I am on page 7, an organizational chart. I just want to bring to your attention, this is our proposed or governor's recommended organization chart, which shows 4 shaded boxes. Are we all on the same page? I want to get up there and help you make sure. These 4 shaded boxes are program option packages. The 7.1, page 7.1, also has shaded boxes that includes the Oregon Community Service Commission, which is in the governor's proposed budget, proposed to move out of our agency into housing and community development. The total increase, as I said earlier, is an increase of 2 full-time equivalents.
Question?
Question. What's the dollar total of that that's moving out?
It's Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, we're moving out approximately $2.5 million in federal funds from our agency to theirs.
Federal dollars, no general fund dollars.
That's correct.
Make sure you identify yourself for the record when you...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Brett West from the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development.
Thank you.
Page 8 of the handout. Over the next 5 days, we will bring back to you more in-depth program discussions about the agency budget. And Mr. Bender has already covered some of these percentages, but I think it is of note that better than 97% of the state's agency budget is a pass-through and does find itself into local communities. 1.8% is state administration, and 0.7% is for debt service. We also have next a couple of pictures that just are graphic displays of what I just talked about and gives you on page 9 the special payments recipients, again, shows you a full litany of the 97.5% of the pass-through. And page 10 then breaks that budget down by general fund, federal fund, and other funds and the programs that we actually fund with those resources. Making sense so far? Program or page 11 talks specifically about the programs that are administered by the agency. And as I said, we will spend considerable time on each of these. All of these programs are about building skill, providing education and training for Oregonians, and our theme for this visit to the Ways and Means is really about communicating to you that this agency is about first, next, and better jobs and the skill development of individuals to that end. Page 12, if you aren't familiar with where all the 17 community colleges are, this is a map that indicates where they are. Some of your copies might be pretty dark. There are dark boxes that actually show the home campus for each of the community colleges. Page 13 then gives you a map of the local workforce investment areas. This is the service delivery area for the federal funds, approximately $111 million for the upcoming biennium. These services include job search, job training, and placement to individuals who are unemployed, underemployed, or simply seeking additional skill. Tomorrow, we will talk more in depth about the workforce development programs. Page 14 covers strategic priorities. You might ask yourself, how does an agency that spends 97% of its resources in the field decide how to spend its time? This set of strategic priority guides the work of the agency and assists us in the allocation of those state resources. And I won't read them to you. See that, again, it's about skill development and education. Page 15 covers agency responsibilities. The department does have multiple responsibilities, all primarily concerned with the public trust of the funds that are allocated to us. We're responsible to the governor, the state board, the state workforce board, and you, the legislature. We do ensure that local programs comply with both state and federal regulations and develop and maintain programs that increase the skill of individuals. Continuing on page 16, responsibilities include resource allocation. Many of the federal funds that we are provided with have set formulas. Others give the governor or other discretionary bodies some leeway in how those funds are decided, so we work for a fair and equitable distribution. We also have information systems that track and report on a wide variety of the programs delivered, a financial and audit systems in place to ensure accountability of not just the funds, but of the services. And we also partner with a whole host of agencies to accomplish this mission. Page 17 gives you a brief look at those partners. This is just an example. There really isn't any way for one department to fully realize a vision of first, next, and better jobs for Oregonians without leveraging resources wherever we can. The community colleges themselves or the state invest well over $1 billion in when you add the state resources, property taxes, and other grant and aid and tuition together. The workforce partners also, when you add all together the federal and state resources that come to move people into jobs and keep them in jobs, is also over $1 billion. So the investment is not to be taken lightly, and we work hard to partner. Page 18 begins performance measures. The state board has two primary performance measures for the community colleges: enrollment and customer satisfaction. Page 18 talks about our enrollment. And as if a trend line going up is a measure of success, we certainly have that. Number 19, customer satisfaction. LFO staff has requested that we stick to the facts, and this one, this was a pretty easy one, to stick to the facts. Community colleges for the third biennium in a row are the highest rated public service in the state, increasing from 88% last biennium to 91% this biennium.
Question, Representative Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you provide us with some of the questions that you asked in your survey? I just find it interesting to note that the two top customer satisfaction was community colleges and parks and open spaces. Of course, Oregonians love their open spaces, as we know. But it would be interesting to see what questions to get to where you were, particularly since 8-12 is at the kind of down at the bottom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, the survey, the population survey, is contracted by the Oregon Progress Board, Jeffrey Tryon's, but I can certainly get you that information of what the questionnaire looks like. But it is done by a third-party entity.
So it is the Progress Board who did this?
Yes, it is. Page 20 are links to benchmarks. We will spend more time on these again as we go through each of the individual programs, but I did want to bring to your attention this handful of benchmarks that have specific links to the agency. We are tracking them. We do acknowledge that they are trend indicators, not performance measures, but we do know that we can affect them, and we're working hard to ensure that our grades go up and not down when the Progress Board does its report. And my understanding is that the Executive Director, Jeff Tryon, is going to be reporting out later this week on the 2001 survey, or his report. page 21 is a picture of the information systems that the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development manages. And it looks kind of like a wild beast here. What we hope to show you is that we do have six different independent information systems. And one of the questions that has been raised is, would it make sense to aggregate them? And our review of the requirements of each is that it would not, because they do provide specific data and information for each of the either the U.S. Department of Education or the U.S. Department of Labor. They make very specific demands on the data and the definition of the data, so we are loath to try to mingle them together. We do have, as you can see, something around 700,000 records in these data systems, providing information on basic education, GED testing, job training, community college services, and professional, technical, and school tour. These systems play a significant role in our ability to be able to be accountable for your investment in this department and for those Oregonians that are seeking their first, next, or better job. And we look forward to the coming days when we can talk more in depth about each of the programs. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. West?
I have nothing to add, Mr. Chair. I am simply here to help my commissioner.
Good. Like to hear. Linda, then.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, Linda Ames with the Department of Administrative Services. I'm going to do a brief overview of the budget, and it's this document here that you have. Page 2 presents the wall of numbers to start out with, the whole budget. I'll just focus on a couple of them. On the governor's recommended budget for general fund, the total agency dollar amount is $474 million, which is a 10% increase from the current biennium and a 7% increase over the current service level. Most of the increase is the $45 million enhancement for enrollment growth. Other funds in the recommended budget account for $11 million. Federal funds is, as mentioned earlier, $111 million. There's a couple things about federal funds that make the numbers look a little odd. It's a 15% increase over the current biennium. That's a little misleading because it's actually pretty stable funding from the current biennium. What happened in 99-01, we're showing only $96 million. The agency actually did receive higher funding and came to a later emergency board to get that limitation increased by $18 million more. So really, we're pretty flat on total federal funding.
Senator Crow, question.
Linda, what counted for the 18% increase in the federal funds?
Mr. Chair, Senator Crow, it's $18 million increase.
The $18 million.
In 99-01, remember some, maybe you can give some details.
Can, please, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tro, the increase in federal funds is primarily as a result that Oregon's economy wasn't growing as fast as the balance of the nation, and we did receive more federal funds for both economically disadvantaged individuals, but we got a large chunk, almost $12 million, I believe, in dislocated worker funds for people who have lost their jobs through no fault of their own.
Will those rates continue into this biennium?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tro, they will moderate some. As the economy softens, more money, more states will come along to where Oregon has been the last several years, so our share of the pie is likely to be diminished.
Now, that funding, since we generally have thought that our economy was in good shape, really doing very well, that funding comes because there seems to be a decline at some level in the economy. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trill, that's exactly right. Oregon did maintain until, I think, about 8 months ago, still double-digit unemployment in some areas of the coast. So we do have maintained really high pockets of unemployment, and these funds are targeted to those areas.
Okay, and that's really has been atypical of the rest of the nation. So we've got some places that are as bad as any place in the country. So.
Good comment.
Just a
question.
Question. Piggybacking on Senator Trill, is that Oregon's economy, unlike in previous years, also was not keeping pace with the national growth. If I remember reading some of the material correctly,
Mr. Chair,
correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Historically, we used to outpace because we had the timber industry and what have you, and then with our shift in our jobs and what have you, we actually were below the national level in growth.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, we did enjoy a few years where we were at or above, but in the last year or so, we have slowed, and other areas have not until recently.
Good comments. Good question.
Okay, one other point I wanted to make on this page, too, is for federal funds, governor's budget as compared to current service level shows a 4.1% reduction. Remember, that's the commission that's going to be transferred to another agency. It's not an actual funding reduction. Okay. Page 3 just shows the total fund budget by type of funds. You can see general fund, as Steve's already gone through, 79% of the budget, and most of this goes directly out to community colleges for general operating purposes. Federal funds is 19% of the budget, and again, the bulk of that is passed on. Other funds at 2% includes a variety of small programs. The largest piece is the Carl Perkins funds that come for technical education. They're actually federal funds that go to the Department of Education, but because they get passed through to community colleges, show up as other funds. That's about $6 million. This includes miscellaneous things like the GED fees, and Oregon Youth Conservation Corps is partially funded with amusement device tax, which shows up as other funds. Page 4, a really brief overview. The governor's budget does include the enrollment growth enhancement, the $45 million, as well as a number of specific program reductions. In general, the reductions were targeted where benefits were less widely distributed compared to the general formula money that went out to all colleges. And I'm going to get into a lot more detail on the reductions later, because I know there'll be some specific interest in those. Page 5 puts a total budget by program unit. They're on the bottom right side, start with office operations, is about 1.8% of the total budget. These guys have talked a little bit about what they do there as coordinators, technical assistants. This is really the administration piece, the 45 staff and administration of both the Community College Support Fund and the Workforce Investment Act program. Then over on the left, you see the big chunk at 80% is really the general fund support that goes out to community colleges. All of that is payments out directly to community colleges. Youth Conservation Corps, at a mere 0.4%, small program. Then the federal and other support to community colleges, mainly the workforce program. That, again, is all funding that goes out to community colleges and other local providers. Debt service, some old bonds from a number of years ago, is going down biennia to biennia, but is right now is at 0.7% of their budget. That's
sure.
General fund.
Question, Senator Trow.
I think Lynn Benton College has a program for the jobs program. And is that funded out of this budget or is it funded in some other way? And how do we show that funding in this budget?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, the funds that are received by Lynn Benton or any other community college from another state agency is not pictured here. That would be additional resources that come to the college. When I talked about the $1 billion investment made in a biennium mm-hmm. with community colleges, that would be part of that grant or other federal resources.
Show us other funds or anything?
No, it does not. It would not be pictured here at all. You would see that primarily in the particular to the jobs program in the Department of Human Services in their contract budget mm-hmm. for jobs.
Thank you. Wendy, go ahead.
Okay. Go ahead and go to page 6. Shows the budget divided by categories. This one's pretty striking, actually. Special payments, that is money that goes out to providers, 97% of the budget, leaving 1% each for debt service, personal services, and services and supplies.
We don't get to see many budget pictures look like that.
No. page 7, summary of emergency boards that are included in this budget. That is ones that came before or through April 2000. The standard salary contract adjustment. Agency received $3 million general fund for the regional partnerships program. This was the second year funding for that program that had been set aside as a special purpose appropriation. They received $287,000 general fund, also a special purpose appropriation for Blue Mountain Community College annexation costs. And again, this money is all passed through to these programs, just the agency that comes to the emergency board. And finally, an Even Start grant that they received for $375,000 federal funds. What you don't see here is the $4.5 million that the emergency board allocated to community colleges in June and the November 2000 emergency boards to help cover the cost of enrollment growth. Because that was after the April 2000 deadline, not included in current service level, so it's not rolled up into this budget.
Question, Senator Phil.
Yeah, that $4.5 million, though, doesn't that get picked up in the $45 million that comes back into the budget to pay for additional enrollment? So although we're paying $4.5 million for previous enrollment growth, as that growth continues, we're picking it up now, aren't we, in the $45 million and continuing to fund it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, yeah, that I think that's essentially correct in that.
So it's not a one.
$4.5 million of the 45, you could just consider us continuing the funding of that four and a half.
It's in part for the sort of the same thing, isn't it?
Exactly.
Just maybe not. Representative Winters?
I just wanted to point a clarification. It wasn't included in part of the roll-up. It was included in part of the 45.
Exactly. Not in current service level, okay. But you could certainly consider it as part of the policy package.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Buffalo, want to add to that at all?
Yes, I think this discussion brings up an important point about the $45 million enhancement, and that is, the emergency board did, as being discussed here, provide $4.5 million for the community college support fund after the April 2000 date. And the significance of the April 2000 date is that for building the budget, the April 2000 date becomes a significant point because only emergency board allocations through that date are added into the state's discussion of the base budget of the agency. And what this means is if the 4.5 million had been allocated in April instead of beginning in June, what you would have seen is that that would have been become part of the base budget for the Community College Support Fund, whereas in this case it didn't. In practical matters, what this means is that because of the timing of the distribution, the current service level for community colleges, what the state is reporting, is an estimated $9.3 million less than the number would have been reported if the only difference had been the emergency board had acted by April. And what this does mean in a funding sense, as far as the community colleges are concerned, is when the emergency board allocated the $4.5 million, we certainly expect that the community colleges used that, and that this became part of their budgets, part of their base budget, as they look forward to their annual budgeting. Assuming that that's the case, this means that you really need to take off that $9.3 million from the 45, and you get that the $45 million enhancement is really providing about 95.3 million, is that what it comes out to be, or $95.7 million, I'm sorry, not 95, $35.7 million dollars above the CSL. And I'm sorry, I don't, even though I just said that, I think I didn't say that very clearly, but I guess what I'm trying to say is there's a certain amount of arbitrariness in the way that the current service level number and, you know, the 45 million is expressed. It's due to the fact that we have to have certain rules when building state budgets or things would go crazy, but as a practical matter, that's not really 45 million over what we believe the ongoing budget for the colleges to be. That's about 35 million over what we believe the ongoing budgets to be.
If I would risk paraphrasing Steve's explanation, the 4.5 rolls up to 9.3 if one was to include that in the CSL, and all the colleges, as Steve pointed out, are probably counting on that as part of their base budget since that was given during the interim. So the new money, big quotes around the word new, would be $35 million that we're enhancing their budget above CSL, and they'll address 35.7 to be exact.
Sharp pencil on this side of the room.
Even so, it's good that we have picked up the 9.3 and that continues plus the 35. Begins to pay for all of that excess.
And I think maybe one other point for benefit of some of the new members is that the 4.5 was not the full amount that the community colleges, I think, really felt they needed to continue their programs even during the interim. There was tough budget decisions to be made there, and they were kind enough to come back with a ratcheted down view of what their needs were, and now they're trying to get closer to the actual needs, I believe, with their request this biennium that the governor and the co-chairs have supported so far.
Does this pay for all the excess enrollment or some of it or what part of it? I know.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, we believe that the when you say does this,
this 45 or 35 plus the 9.3 that should have rolled up but didn't, but it's in the 45.
Thank you for that clarification. Doesn't really change the answer. Senator, we believe that this investment made by the governor and also receiving the nod from the co-chairs does certainly help the colleges for the next year of the biennium, but we are bulging at the seams and anticipate that we'll have capacity needs again come next biennium. So this certainly puts us in a good place for the coming biennium, but if growth continues as we anticipate, you'll see us again.
Representative Winters?
I just only had a brief comment because since we were discussing the e-board and the 99 session, I think we need to remember that the last session that the community colleges did not fare as well in the revenue side of the picture as some of the other agencies, and I know that there were a number of us who had committed that we should be doing a better job with the community colleges in
and so in addition to the 35.7, my pencil was a little sharper, and we had made some commitments out of the 99 session, and I think that those of us who were here who made those commitments, recognizing that they did not receive the dollar revenue that some of us would have liked for them in 99. I just wanted to express that.
Representative Smith?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Just continue on.
Continue on page 7, current service level adjustment. Agency received standard position and inflation adjustment, state government service charge. Inflation adjustment for the Community College Support Fund was similar to last biennium, but it is a little different. For one thing, we use an annual calculation for inflation for the support fund. And maybe most importantly, local revenues, that is property taxes, are taken into account in determining the state needs. The projections for the property taxes are the same as we've used in the 12 budget, and basically we've accounted for all that property tax, and the state need is the remainder after we account for what they expect to get from property taxes. Page 8, the final current service level adjustment, there were a number of one-time funding sources that were included in the 9901 budget that have been taken out for 0103 for a total of about $795,000. $325,000 of that was funding for past annexations. About $400,000 was for facility renovations at Mount Hood and Chemeketa Community Colleges, and $70,000 was for the Rogue Community College Mental Health Technician Pilot Program. On page 9, I've laid out all of the detail of the reductions that are included in the governor's budget, so that you have a reference as we go through the next week and look at some of these programs and have people in to talk about them. The total reduction, $12.7 million general fund, that reduces funding for the regional partnerships program by $4.9 million, leaving $1.2 million in the budget to help them with the transition. It reduces the direct state funding to the Sabin Skills Center by $1.7 million, leaving $1.1 million in the budget. That's more of a K-12 program associated particularly with North Clackamas School District. This direct state funding as a grant provides around a third of their budget, while the regular North Clackamas funding provides about two-thirds of that program. The budget eliminates the state funding for the Oregon Advanced Technology Center in Wilsonville for a $1.8 million reduction. It eliminates the additional state funding for the basic skills centers at six community colleges. The way that this basic skills is currently funded for all 17 community colleges, basic skills students count as an FTE like any other student, so they get the normal per FTE funding. At these six community colleges, besides the per FTE funding, there is this additional grant, so these six receive the grant funding plus the per FTE. That reduction in the governor's budget is $3.4 million. The next two eliminations, I guess $100,000 each, for the Central Oregon Advanced Technology Center and the Southern Oregon Advanced Technology Center. Last session, each of those received $100,000 at the end of the session to really get them started. Second to the last item, it eliminate funding for the central.
Senator Trow, question.
Were those one-time grants of $1 million? So they expected that those would go away.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tro, for the two advanced technology centers, it's only $100,000.
I mean $100,000.
It really wasn't clear in the bill if that was expected to be one time or not. We did not treat it as one time without specific indication that it was meant.
It would have rolled up, is that it?
It would have otherwise.
Okay. Follow up to Senator Tro's question, but these were added on at the very end of session, you indicated.
I believe that they were in that final bill.
Okay. Thank you.
It eliminates...
Is it our understanding?
I don't remember.
Second to last eliminates about $300,000 for the Central Oregon University Center. The idea was that the new branch campus that is proposed in the governor's budget would serve those needs for Central Oregon now. And finally, it eliminates the direct funding of apprenticeship programs for $400,000 reduction. Right now, there's some apprenticeship programs that are funded directly, and there are others that are funded through the formula on the per FTE basis. And this would simply put them all into the formula and give them equal funding. It would not actually be a cut in funding in terms of what the programs would receive. It's a cut in the budget in the sense that we didn't add the money in to the formula money.
That's actually not very clear, Lynn. Maybe.
Oh, yes. Now that I think about it, it is.
Let's see if I can track that. The program remains, but it has $400,000 less debt.
Right, that's right. There's $400,000 less in the total budget as a result of this reduction.
So,
but we expect that the programs will continue to be funded through the formula.
I see. $45 million.
It's just that $400,000 will now be used for the apprenticeship students rather than something else.
So you're redirecting the $400,000 someplace else?
We expect that the services are redirected, but we haven't provided additional funding for it.
That was
in that sense, it is a reduction to the budget.
So the $400,000 is a reduction.
It is truly a reduction of funding.
Follow-up question then. What about the rest of this? Is that true in any other reductions that we see here?
Mr. Chair, no.
Another follow-up question. What was the rationale behind reducing the regional partnerships by that 4.9 and leaving the 1.2? Is there a significance to the 1.2 there and also with the Safe and Skills Center leaving the 1.1? What was the rationale for taking that amount of dollars out and leaving these other dollars?
Mr. Chair, on the regional partnership, we were aware that there are some projects going on within those regional partnerships that are, for instance, at Blue Mountain, that are technology-related, system-related things that it seemed to make sense to be able to finish certain pieces that you had gotten started. The 1.2 was not terribly scientific, certainly, but the idea was that in that program they needed to have at least a little bit of funding to finish up some things. It was intended that 0103 would be the last biennium of funding for this program to start with, or for these particular partnerships. The idea of that regional partnership money when it started 4 years ago was that it would be sort of venture capital, that it would get some things going in some certain partnerships, and then it would move on to start other programs, other places, and 0103 would have been the third biennium for these same partnerships. So they were in the process of finishing up projects during 0103. This does move the timeline up considerably, however.
Is that follow-up? Is that also true with the Sabin Skills Center?
The Sabin Skills Center, no, it's quite... That was always considered by Sabin. I think I can say is ongoing funding. The idea of leaving a fairly big piece of funding in there was more that as the Department of Education is really developing their CAM standards, that this is such a good example of one possibility of that kind of a program, that we wanted to give them enough funding that the transition to other sources of funding wouldn't be devastating to the program.
Senator Trell?
Did you know when you did that the Sabin Skill Center can find other sources of funding?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trell, not definitely.
Okay. And there have been any plans that they would, that this money would phase out and they would go to other kinds of funding?
I don't believe there have been distinct discussions about moving them to other funding.
So it's a surprise to me.
Representative Winters.
Is there any programs to take up where Sabin Skill Center leaves off? If you're cutting back on Sabin Skill Center, what's out there in the universe to do what Sabin Skill Center is doing?
If I may, Brett West for the record, Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, we will have Ron Naso, who's the superintendent of the North Clackamas School District, and D. Gray, the principal of Sabin here, I believe in 2 days, and I think they could help better answer those questions.
Good. Thanks. Another question?
Thank you. It was answered, and I'll save them for later, Mr. Chair.
Let's move on then.
Page 10, the agency's policy packages. Package 101, the student-based funding, $45 million, that I think you're all familiar with here by now. Package 103-203, agency infrastructure, moves 4 positions that are currently contracted out to permanent positions within the agency. In terms of dollars, it involves no net increase in funding, but does on the general fund side, it does transfer some funding, $397,000. It's currently funded through the Community College Support Fund relating to distance learning, and it would move that funding to office operations. And then $88,000 other funds and $97,000 federal funds for a total of 3.7 FTE. This affects 3 general program areas, would allow the agency to provide better support in distance learning, the Even Start family literacy programs, and the basic skills assessment systems. Generally provide some consolidation of those functions within the agency. Page 11, final policy package 105, the Community Service Commission transfers that commission over to the Oregon Housing and Community Services Department. The total funding that will be transferred out of this agency is 100,000 other funds, 4.9 million federal funds, and 2 positions. You'll hear more from the commission and hopefully from housing as well. The general idea was that that commission focuses really volunteerism, community service and support, and that they had closer ties with the Housing and Community Services Department, that they would be able to be more effective with the kind of relationships that they could develop within that agency. Finally, there was one fee change during the interim for the GED testing program. The agency did report to the emergency board on that fee in November, and it became effective January 01. That fee increase would be ratified in the fee bill, which is House Bill 5032, which I believe you'll also be hearing here.
Question, Senator Trill.
Does the governor's budget anticipate any tuition increases in the community college budgets I know you did in the higher ed budget anticipate tuition increases.
Mr. Chair, Senator Toe, the tuition piece of community college funding is not a part of the state funding calculations really in any way.
Okay.
It's my understanding that community colleges do expect small increases. I'm probably address that better. But it does, what they increase at the local level doesn't affect.
Traditionally, never in this budget, the,
right.
Any anticipation about what happens to tuition.
Exactly.
Well, I'd like to ask that question, though, if you don't mind, about what are the anticipated tuition increases then, irrespective of what the state does.
Mr. Chair, I do anticipate that many of the colleges will raise tuition. It is, as you probably well know, a local board decision about their where they set tuition and how often they raise it. The conversations I have had with boards and presidents is that I would say at least half of them are anticipating a dollar per credit increase in the coming year.
What would that translate into on an annual or biennial basis for a student then?
Well, Mr. Chair, the average is between $38 and $40 per credit hour for a full-time student. I can't do the math, but I think it's about $1,800 a term. For a full year.
18 what?
So if I may, just so we're clear, the total tuition increase, if you did do a dollar per credit hour, would be about that eight. Well, maybe come back with that information.
Yeah.
I'm more comfortable with that.
I think, Mr. Chair, it makes more sense to bring some real information than what I can pull out of my brain quickly enough.
I just saw some students just kind of teaching in the audience when we threw out that figure, so it would be nice for us to know.
Exact figures.
Mr. Chair, for the record, it wouldn't be an increase of $1,800.
Thank
that would
you.
Be the cost of tuition for the year. The increase would probably be about, what, $45, something like that.
Mr. President, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
It does seem to me that that this whole picture of education fits together, both the community college and the higher ed picture, and if one tuition goes up dramatically and the other doesn't, it may have an effect upon who goes where.
Mm-hmm.
We need to understand that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes,
General. On that subject, and I apologize if you covered it, do the community college students get to pay incidental fees?
Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, incidental fees such as?
We'll support some organizations that they may or may not really want to support.
Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, I cannot answer your question. I can certainly bring the information back to you. I truly do not know. Via local board decision.
We've had in higher ed, and I've always wondered why it is that we wrestle so much with tuition when students continue to, well, in some respects, in a semi-voluntary way, but probably less than that, are forced to pay for groups that probably ought to be self-supporting or raise money through other ways than forcing students to pay for their cause through incidental fees. So to the extent we can eliminate that activity, we'll offset the increase in the tuition, which probably is what students ought to be responsible for.
Very good. Linda?
Mr. Chair, I'm finished with my presentation.
Any other questions of any of our presenters or LFO at this time? I guess I had just a couple, if I may. Sorry for keep the committee, but at one point, and I'm sure it will be addressed, I wanted to make clear to the committee the difference between some of the workforce investment programs that are done through the community colleges and their relationship to the other, there were other agencies that deal with this, like SDSD and AFS and for the vocational rehabilitation program, so that, because this committee has been interested, as well as others, in effective flow through of these dollars. Certainly, community colleges would seem to be doing a very good job, but to avoid duplication and make very clear all the relationships, that would be very, very helpful, I think. The other question that I guess I would like, it might be helpful to the committee, is that when we talk about the enrollment increase, I know I'm looking basically at our LFO analysis, page 4, at the bottom of the page, they talk about recent enrollment growth has accelerated over the growth rates of the mid-90s, and part of this increased growth is a result of the expansion of community college services in Jackson, Klamath, and Curry County. So I'd like to see what the growth rate is, factoring those expansions out over the last few years, just so we have a really pretty clear idea of exactly what the growth rate is, and as opposed to what the new added on impact new service areas would be, just so members can have a pretty clear picture on that. Question, Representative?
For me, it would be helpful if you provide me with the information of the age demographics as to the growth rate.
Okay, good. One last question, if I may, is when you do the performance data, in the LFO analysis, you talk about your three primary areas of involvement with lower college credit division, your professional development division, and your adult basic education. It'd be interesting to see, you know, fairly quantifiably, if possible, how what you do or what you spend in this $45 million or whatever in particular, how that's going to improve your performance in each of those various divisions. That would be helpful. Any other questions or concerns? I guess we'll adjourn the committee and prepare for tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.